Welcome to this newest edition of the Who's the One podcast, where we talk about Arizona's first congressional district, where six Democrats are vying to take on Republican incumbent David Schweikert in the fall. With Anita Malik, I'm Steve Goldstein. As this episode goes public, we are just one day away from the July 30th primary that the candidates, some of them have been waiting 2 years for, and Anita and I on the podcast have been waiting several months for. And on this edition of the podcast, we'll be talking numbers with Garrett Archer of ABC 15 and Sam Almy of Uplift Campaigns, both very, very focused on the data, the numbers, the turnout. Anita and I will get into all of that and more when the Who's the One podcast starts in just a few seconds.
Garrett, thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So we are obviously a podcast about the AZ01 race, but I have to first start off with, I mean, you're very busy right now, obviously. What are you watching the most closely for this primary election?
I think it's both CD1 and CD8. I mean, and CD3 to an extent. The races, with the except, let me preface this. CD3 and CD8, of course, are the races that just because of their makeup, are whoever wins these two races are going to go on and win the general. So for the Democrats, CD3, CD8 for the Republicans. CD1, obviously very interesting because it is the only true swing district in Arizona at this time. You know, there's a small exception of CD6, but really it's all the action in November is going to be in CD1. So those are the races I'm looking at. As far as like Senate's, you know, can be interesting. It does appear that Lake's going to come out on top tomorrow by, you know, it's really going to depend on the margin. You know, what her margin is more what I'm interested in rather than who wins that one. So yeah, that's who I'm looking at right now.
So you've probably obviously seen the polling on the CD1 race. It's extremely close from what we know.
Yeah, as you would expect a race like that.
Yeah, with the six-way split and kind of this four, I would say four-way tie. I think it kind of keeps shifting a little bit. You know, we are known for incoming, the data incoming. What are you preparing for in these next few days? You know, we talked to Stephen Richer last week on an episode, and he's thinking it'll probably maybe get us till Friday by the time we might know something in such a tight race.
In a race like CD1? Yeah. CD1 is one of those races that we're going to be watching down to the wire. No matter what. And that always happens with multi-candidate races, is we sort of always wait. There's really not going to be a call until basically we know that 98% of ballots are in. So what I'll be doing is I've got all my sort of scripts that I've coded over the years to ingest data from the Secretary of State's office and the county recorder's office. I'll be checking on those trends to see what's happening. You know, I was nowadays observing the difference between the early ballots for Republicans and the election day ballots is always interesting right now because it's been so in flux since 2020. It used to be very stable. It is no longer stable. You know, to see who gets that election day vote. It does not happen with the Democrats. Democrats are still very stable in the early vote versus election day. So realistically, for CD1, that 8 o'clock drop is going to mean pretty much everything because, in again, a multi-party race, probably not going to see a lot of drastic movement by any one or two candidates. Maybe some pretty decent movement, but not drastic movements like we see on the Republican side. So if we have, you know, one or two candidates that are sort of lifting above the foam at 8 o'clock, then we're really going to be paying attention to those one or two candidates from then on.
But in such a close race, what, in your opinion, would be lifting above the foam? What numbers should we be looking
for? I mean, this is a shot in the dark, but I'd say maybe 3 points, you know, 3 percentage points, 2 percentage points. That's pretty much lifting above the foam in a six candidate race. Yeah. So, I mean, even that's even pretty dramatic.
Half a point, maybe.
half a point is that's anybody's race at that point.
Right.
Yeah, like we're looking at, you know, if someone's 2 percentage points up. Now, of course, we're talking about a much smaller total number of votes. So 2 percentage points, I haven't done the math yet. So I don't know what the exact raw number of a percent is in CD1, but it's not going to be a whole lot.
As Anita mentioned, we talked to Stephen Richer. With all the things you do on X these days and having to counter the false claims that continue among some, whether that's limited acts or whether that's elected officials involved or not, that shouldn't be a factor at all in the CD1 Democratic primary. But what's your level of feeling about how much that could come out generally for the primary races, whether congressional or legislative ones that are tight, where people are going to start saying, well, I mean, it was clearly stolen from me.
Well, one of the things we try to do now, especially when the election day gets as obviously comes, since it is tomorrow, is one thing I really want to tamp down on is why Arizona takes so quote unquote so long to tabulate these early ballots, because it drives people crazy. They don't really, the people who aren't paying attention don't really know. So they just sort of make these assumptions about why Arizona takes 4, 5, 6 days to, you know, get from 80% to 99%. And you know what people don't, and they're like, oh, why does it not take Florida that long? Well, the reason is we have different laws than Florida. I mean, it's really, it comes completely down to different laws. In Arizona, we allow for voters, we allow voters the convenience of dropping off their early ballot at the vote center. And in that convenience comes a consequence of having to process those early ballots, just like all the others were processed that have been received for the past 20 days or 28 days. So those ballots, they go on election night, they get sent over to Runbeck for scanning, and then they go through the signature verification process. They have to go through everything that comes with allowing a basically untouched ballot to be dropped off on election day. And so that is the sole reason why it takes us so long to tabulate ballots. If we change that part of the law, we could have this done that night, just like Florida. But this is something that Arizona allows for its voters. They basically, in the way I look at it is, you know, this is something that's given to the voters at convenience. You know, it's at the detriment of election observers, the people that want the information now, they want the results now. Why don't we have it? You know, what do we find more important? Is it more important that we get the results immediately, or that voters get the opportunity to drop off their ballot if for some reason they left it on the counter? Now, you know, I could see the arguments both ways, but that really is what it boils down to.
Being the data analyst person you've been for so long here, this is just something I have to ask. Have you ever considered or seen, I don't think we've ever seen one, but has it ever crossed your mind about some type of, it's so close that it's almost virtually a tie in a race like this?
Oh yeah, it happens all the time. I mean, there's a very good chance that this race is going to go, I mean, especially with Arizona's new recount laws, right. There's a good chance that this race will go in a recount. That happens all the time. And then of course it's, you know, what's interesting about recounts, of course, is that it's sort of, not that it goes past the sort of the legal boundaries of elections, but you know, lawyers are able to sort of press those boundaries a little bit on recounts. And so it's interesting to see what directions they take. Like, for example, this one I'll actually say was, in many ways, it was a good thing. In the Christine Jones, Andy Biggs primary back in 2016, that one was decided by what, 16 votes in Biggs's favor. One of the things that came out of that primary recount was, at the time in Maricopa County, if you had, this was pre-vote center, if you had voted in a different precinct, so you know, you were at work or you just didn't know, and there were two polling places right next to you and you went to the wrong one and you filled out a provisional ballot, well, those provisional ballots were kicked off. They were dismissed, and a judge says, no, you can't do that. You can't just dismiss those ballots simply because the person went to the wrong polling place. And so that's why from here on out, we use these vote centers so that, you know, if someone gets, you know, goes somewhere else rather than that exact polling location, they can still, that ballot will still count. And that was the result of a recount in CD5.
Garrett, because you're the data guru, but as I mentioned, there's a lot of you having to counter some of these claims, these false claims about elections being stolen or how come there were so many people to votes ratio, whatever it was. One of the things that Anita and I've gone over with CD1 over and over again is that there has been this dynamic feeling, and I mean, Anita ran against Schweikert and he continues to win, and maybe this will be the year where he doesn't. But one thing, because he seemed to have sort of ridden this tightrope of not wanting to go full MAGA, but also sort of voting in that sense, voting the way former President Trump would have wanted. Do you see anything that would indicate, because again, Schweikert has not lost, anything that would indicate to you looking way ahead, October, November, that if Schweikert were to somehow lose this seat, that he would flip? Could you see there could be a concern here that maybe he would start saying election was stolen, election was stolen? Or is there, it's hard to read a guy's character, read his head like that, but this is one of the tightest seats in the country for an incumbent. Any thoughts on that?
It's hard, as you just said, it's hard to read people's minds. I did work for David Schweikert back in 2012. I was part of his pack, you know, before I was in the media and everything. It was, he was one of the people I worked for. And so I do have a prior relationship with Schweikert. And I mean, I cannot read his mind, but, you know, Schweikert does understand the election process. So, you know, that's, I guess that is the best way for me to say it without sort of, you know, putting thoughts into people's heads.
So we know you're extremely busy today, and as tomorrow and the rest of the week will be. Give us a, and then we'll let you go, but give us a little glimpse for our listeners of like what these days look like for you. How long are we talking?
The primary is actually not terrible. So, I mean, the only thing about tomorrow that we don't know is, and this is my big unknown. I'm trying to get this tamped down because it's always, when are the election day ballots going to show up at MECTEC? Because there's some sort of discussion over, because of a lot of the pressure they got from the quote unquote election integrity activists, that they're going to do a different procedure in counting the early voting ballots. And they may have to count them, you know, if they count them in a different process at the vote center, that may delay getting the results from election day to MECTEC. And I don't know if they're going to drive those cards over, you know, the SD card over, but prior to closing out a vote center, or if they're going to drive them over after the vote center's closed out. So that's what I'm trying to figure out is when are we going to get our first real results after 8 o'clock? I mean, 8 o'clock is about 80% of the results. And for most races, it is the lockdown moment. You know, it's like, okay, that this one's over, this one's over, this one's over, but not always the case. And so we obviously, even, you know, candidates that are down, especially if they're only down like a half point, they want to see what those election day ballots are going to be. And we don't know when they're going to be in yet. That's my biggest concern is we could be here really late tomorrow, just waiting for some of those first drops.
Special thanks again to Garrett Archer for joining us on the Who's the One podcast. Garrett on X, since I referenced X a couple of times during the interview, he is at Garrett underscore Archer, but even better, he's known as the AZ ABC 15 data guru. And speaking of data gurus, Anita and I also had a chance to talk with Sam Almy of Uplift Campaigns to find out what turnout looks like and how it compares to previous cycles. Here's that conversation.
Sam, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Anita. Thanks for having me here.
Yeah, I know these are busy times, looking at all the data and kind of making sense of what's happening for primaries across the state. I wanted to start out with something, though. You and I kind of had a pre-conversation to this, and we also had Stephen Richer on a previous episode. And, you know, Steve likes to get in, our Steve Goldstein here, likes to get into kind of that, like people that are complaining here at the end, right? Like, why can't you count the ballots quicker and all that? And we talked about, traditionally, you see the Democrats vote early. They don't drop off their ballots at the last minute. Republicans drop off their ballots at the last minute. Is that still the trend? Because I know earlier in the month, you were noting that trend might be changing. Are you still seeing that?
Yeah, I am actually seeing that. It seems that we have Republicans are this is statewide, are returning to voting by mail earlier. This is something we haven't seen since 2018. 2020 and the 22 election cycle, Dems led throughout the, I think, six or seven election cycles I counted before 2020. The Republicans always had a lead throughout early voting.
Interesting. So we think that day of ballots is going to be...
That's going to be really interesting to see, because I don't know how many Republicans are still holding on to their ballots. Right now, what we're seeing is a lot of the Republicans that have returned their ballots, it's not necessarily a choice of, oh, they're voting early versus not voting at all. A lot of these voters are 4x4 voters, meaning they voted in four of the last four primaries. So they are expected to turn out again. They're just choosing to turn out early rather than at the polls that we've seen the last couple election cycles.
That's definitely interesting because, you know, I mean, you're hearing that from a national perspective too, that like, well, maybe mail ballots are okay. The GOP is kind of changing their tune. So I was
Maybe,
curious how that reflected across the state.
yeah, maybe they are easier and more convenient.
Maybe go figure, right? Yeah. So kind of drilling down now, of course, into AZ01, the Dem primary. So we know we are all about the mail-in ballots, but what is the turnout looking like right now? Are we on par with past cycles?
We are the only, well, I only have 2022 to compare it to. It didn't exist prior to that, and I didn't move my numbers over. But we are right on par with the 2022 primary. We're at 40% right now. This is as of Friday morning. That's the data that I have. Friday morning prior to election in 2022 is 39.2. So right on even par.
So Sam, what, because to me that this is, and I'm a little biased as Anita and I've done this podcast for several months now. This is such an important, the CD1 race specifically is so important to find the right nominee to take on David Schweikert, who's this incumbent who keeps winning and winning and winning. Is there any analysis there as far as could some Democrats be doing what we talked about Republicans doing, maybe waiting a little bit longer because they're not quite sure. There are so many undecided, or they're deciding between two and three people. And they're also like, ugh, this vote is so meaningful. I really need to make sure I make the right call.
There's certainly going to be that case in this particular district. It is going to be one of the most contentious races in the country in the general election. The Democrats having to pick that correct candidate, I think, is a lot on their mind right now. What you're going to see is younger voters, 45 and under, typically will show up either dropping off their ballot on election day or voting in person.
Yeah, because I did notice that, and from your demographics data, that what we're seeing so far in your returns are is over 55. I mean, that's what's dominating right now, and that's
Absolutely.
pretty standard, right?
That is very standard. I think statewide, it's something like 69% of all voters are 65 plus. For AZ01, it's a little bit less. It looks at about 53% of all voters are 65 plus.
And then in this district, you also have kind of that gender split here in terms of the voter demographics and the turnout. Is that, I mean, it's a very slight difference as of now, but is that something that we generally see? Or women, I mean, women generally vote more. Is that what we're going to expect to see?
Yeah, absolutely. You definitely see women turn out higher than men in general when it comes to the Democratic Party primaries and Democratic ballots. Men are, or women rather, always outperform men. There's simply more women Democratic voters. They make up a larger share of that electorate coming back.
Sam, I wonder if this question is both for you and Anita, but we are talking the day before the primary election day, and as we're talking about the numbers of people who've turned in their ballots, if we had talked to you a week or so ago, would that have been, a different strategy? Would the Democratic candidates have been able to look at the numbers, just even general numbers, not that they're working through a particular campaign or working through a particular company, and they see the numbers that you have gathered here? Anita, is it too late to do a quick strategic push? Is it too late? Sam, when you see numbers like this, if you guys were in the minds of campaigns right now, what would they have been thinking? I know it's harder to think about it a day before, but even a week before, would they look at the numbers and say, okay, we still have a chance to do this, this, and this? Or is it just once you get to that point, not much you can do?
That's a good question. For campaign strategy, I'm not the sharpest, but I certainly think if you're changing course a day before the election, I mean, there's always that impetus on a campaign. You have to be busy. You have to be doing something. So you're always trying to optimize these little things. I've been watching this race in particular throughout early voting, and the numbers are just right in line with 2022. So I think after 1 or 2 weeks of early voting, I would have a pretty good sense as to how many ballots are expected to come in, and what should I expect on election day. Now I'm looking at what are the hot vote centers where I can get my candidate passing out lit cards, volunteers there.
Yeah, I would say the same thing. You're not switching major strategy at this point, but you are definitely looking at where are those voters that maybe, as Sam says, are 4x4 or 3x4, and they just haven't showed up yet. how do I get in touch with them? Let's put all our volunteer efforts on the ones we know are going to vote. I think it's a little late to say I'm going to encourage new people to vote in the primary. That could happen, but just less likely. But that kind of leads me to a thought I had. And Sam, I don't know if you've looked at this or had the opportunity to, but based on where turnout was before everything switched at the presidential level and Biden dropped down, we have Kamala to kind of where they are now. Was there any type of, I mean, you said we're matching 2022, but was there any surge in this? Because I believe very early in the month, we thought, oh, turnout looks a little low for this race. Did you notice anything different there or across the state?
I would say in this last week, it does look like, it looked like there's a little bit more ballot returns coming in this past week for the AZ01 Dem primary. Statewide, I still the trends are pretty normal. A lot of people who vote in the primary election are the informed electorate. They aren't going to be affected by this sort of big national news. They have their plan. It doesn't drift too much.
So
General election, general election, completely different
yeah,
story. We're getting
right.
people out there. They're energized. They have a reason to vote. At least one of the candidates isn't too old. So that's huge.
Isn't too old. I like that. Nice qualifier there.
Yeah.
Yeah, so perhaps it's some of the, because I know I had people on the mail deadline. So the 23rd, I want to say, was the mail, last day to mail your ballot or recommend it. And I definitely had people who I know normally would have voted that first or second day that were texting me, okay, I finally filled it out, or oh, I still have to drop it off. I have several of those.
I had those friends too.
So it could be what we've been saying, maybe more so than anything else all along, is like, I just can't decide in this field. And
Yeah,
people waited.
absolutely. I think that the poll that came out, that the one poll that I saw undecided was the leading candidate.
Sam, this applies to me as an independent voter who got a Democratic ballot. Any numbers that are interesting to you on that, as far as where party not designated or independent folks have gone so far with ballot returns?
What I'm finding really interesting there is more independents have selected a Republican ballot. That's pretty typical to see, and I'm talking statewide numbers here. The advantage is about 14,000 more ballots went Republican than Democrats. But as for returns, both independent returns make up 8.4% of the party's nominees.
Okay.
So I find that number being equal is pretty interesting. Turnout for those people who have requested a ballot also equal at about 60%. We're looking at Arizona 1 with the Democratic side, 10% of all ballots have been returned by independent voters. So that's a little bit higher than the statewide average.
And what do you think final turnout will be?
I think I looked at statewide, and I think it's going to be in the low 30%, because we turnout is pretty on par with 2022, so we're probably going to be around total 1.2 to 1.3 million ballots.
Thank you so much. I'm just so curious because, they always say presidential year, you get a little surge. Obviously, you get that in the general for sure, but
Yes.
how this would play out. And I think for Steve and I, it's been just fascinating to know, people are holding on to those ballots. So we appreciate your data and your insight.
Yeah, you're welcome. Anytime I can talk numbers with somebody outside of my house, that's always appreciated.
That's all for this edition of the Who's the One podcast. To get in touch with us, email az01podcast@gmail.com. That's az01podcast@gmail.com. If you are still undecided, if you have not yet turned in your ballot, you're still trying to figure it out, take some time to listen to some of our past Who's the One podcasts. You can find them wherever you get your podcasts, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, or you can simply Google the Who's the One podcast to hear some great conversations and great analysis of the race so far. If you're on social media, you can find Anita on X at Anita Malik, and I am on X at Off Center Voice. Music for this podcast provided by Epidemic Sound. For Anita Malik, I'm Steve Goldstein. Thanks for listening to Who's the One?